The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
As you may have heard over the course of the weekend, Ireland secured their third Grand Slam on Saturday with a 24-15 win over England and in their backyard and on St. Patrick's Day. This is the story of the championship.
Three is a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient scripture.
48, of course, was the year which I'd say we've all been dining out on ever since.
It was a vintage team. We had everything. And of course, we had Jack Hyde. Was a genius.
This must be it. This must be it for Ronan O'Gara. Drop it, goal. Grand Slam at stage. He's got it!
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is possible.
Teddy Thomas, space in front of Thomas. He could go through the middle here. Teddy Thomas for the line and over he goes.
Some ground being made now. Sexton from outside the 10-metre line. It's spinning. It's spinning. Jonathan Sexton has made it. He has snatched victory from the jaws of defeat for Ireland.
C'est terrible. Terrible.
Carberry. And it's an easy opportunity for Stockdale. Stockdale has Earls inside him if he wants to use him. He may not need him, he doesn't need him. And he runs in the second try of the afternoon.
Sexton, wonderful pass, and Stockdale finishes.
Anscombe,
the intercept from Stockdale, and he'll race away to send Ireland to victory over the Welsh.
Peter Horn, oh, that's an intercept for Stockdale, and he'll race clear. He gets his fifth try of this NatWest Six Nations Championship.
Bundiaki, Ringrose, Stockdale. Stockdale scores in the corner. He makes it look so easy.
Murray for Stockdale down the left-hand side. Stockdale past Mike Brown. Oh, and it's just got away from him. Has he got it down in the end? Another Irish try right in the stroke of half-time. It's 11-9 for this 21-year-old from Ulster.
It's extraordinary stuff, isn't it?
And unless England come up with the goods at the Stade de France, Ireland will be champions by the end of the night.
That's going to be it. It is knocked forward. It is a victory for France in terms of this game. But the big victory today is Ireland's crowned the Six Nations champions for 2018.
Nine years out from the heroics at the Millennium Stadium in 2009, Ireland looking to repeat something that's only ever been done in 48 and once this century.
My heart is in my mouth, really. I think it's just an incredible setting. To win a Grand Slam here would be phenomenal, but it's going to take a huge effort from Joe Schmidt's side.
Sexton straight into the air, down on top of Watson. Here comes Kearney. Well, it's been put down. Well, he eventually got there, Ben Skeen, and Ireland have got the dream start at Twickenham.
What a start, what a kick from Sexton.
Through the middle, on he goes. Bundiaki inside him to Stander. Stander almost over. Stander is over. There's the full-time whistle. Ireland and Joe Schmidt, they join the heroes of 1948 and 2009. Grand Slam winners. On St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham. What a story!
A sweet thing it is, a Grand Slam on St. Patrick's Day in Twickenham, and to pick through the bones of that, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Keith Wood, and joining us in studio is Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. Keith, we'll start with you first. Your emotions at the full-time whistle, I know you were there in Twickenham on Saturday. When the full-time whistle blew, the Grand Slam was finally within our reach. What were you feeling?
I felt kind of hard to say how excited I was, and I don't mean to say that it diminished. And I think Rory might help me with this in the atmosphere on the ground. After about 5 minutes of the game, Ireland looked excellent, and I just couldn't see us losing. So the atmosphere kind of dropped from an English perspective in the ground. And yes, they were singing Sweet Low, Sweet Chariot, and there was the Fields of Athenry obviously coming, but it just looked like we were in control of the whole thing. So I think about 10 minutes before full time, I said, it's done. We still have to finish it out. But we looked strong, and yes, they got a score, but it wasn't ever going to be enough. It was at that very depth to get there. And it was a relief that it was done. It was exciting, and it had been great for the whole time, but it just built and built and built and built. And do you know what it felt like? It felt like this is a team in control of its own destiny. So there wasn't a nervy element at any part of the game. It just felt incredibly professional. And some of the skill was just excellent. And it felt right. It's what it felt like after 80 minutes. So I wasn't as excited, jumping around. Everybody was jumping around, but we kind of knew it. We knew it was happening before the end.
Yeah, Rory, I remember testing the integrity of the sliding door in my apartment in 2009 when Ronan O'Gara's drop goal went over in Cardiff and the final whistle blew. There seemed almost that climactic, for want of a better term, orgasmic moment where everybody knew that this win was finally within a reach, but it was a slow burn almost with this championship and indeed with this match, in the sense that we knew we could do it. We knew as the championship went on, we were probably going to do it. But it's until you get over that line that you don't know unless you actually have it within your hands. But then again, along the way, I don't think there was that moment of panic, that moment of lacking a bit of certainty about where this is going to go. It was always a case of, if we steer the right course, this is going to be okay.
Yeah, I think if you flip the tournament, Richie, and you start in Twickenham with a very impressive win, you beat the three teams at home, and then you go to Paris and win it at the last minute after 41 phases, that's your moment. But what Twickenham lacked on Saturday, and even just listening to Dave's commentary there and remembering the fact that all three of Ireland's tries went to the TMO, so we had even that kind of minute-long period of kind of watching the replays and realising slowly. So you didn't have even a big bang moment where where Ireland led. Even the Stockdale try, where you kind of realised it was over, that came at half time. So it was just strange throughout. It was strangely anticlimactic in a very good way, because it felt this must be what the All Blacks fans and media feel like, because you kind of expected. I had a good strong sense that Ireland were going to win it beforehand. The first 5 minutes confirmed it for me. Watching it back this morning, the first 5 minutes were so impressive. From the first contact, Ireland were dominant. They were brave with the ball as well as without the ball. And they managed every moment. Even when Peter Manny got sim-binned, it was really, really impressive. From the moment Johnny Sexton dropped that goal, because they lost control in Paris for 20 minutes and nearly threw the whole thing away. From that moment, they never lost control of their own destiny. They led in every game, they controlled every game, and they just took that to Twickenham, a place where Ireland teams, whatever about 09, you remember Shane Horgan's try in the last minute, Tommy Bowe's try with a couple of minutes to go, where Ireland always almost had to leave it late, or it was always squeaky bum time towards the end of a game in Twickenham. There was nothing like that. And to see England push for a try at the end, to the strains of Olé Olé coming down from the Irish fans, and eventually get the try, but it was the Irish subs who were ready to invade the pitch. It was just so incongruous to everything we know as Irish sports fans, people who cover Irish sport. It was the most un-Irish victory, but it's the way Ireland are now under Joe Schmidt, and it's something that I think Irish fans are going to have to learn to embrace, because this team is only just getting going in some ways.
Yeah, Keith, it's something that, as Rory mentioned there, we're not used to. I mean, winning is one thing. Occasionally getting, like the Grand Slam in 2009 was fantastic. Winning was the three championships in 5 years. It was fantastic. But just this, being that good is not a very Irish thing. I mean, and getting used to it is not a very Irish thing. We still see complaints, and we'll get to the style of play down the line in this, but we still see complaints that Ireland aren't entertaining enough. We've just won a Grand Slam. And we look like we're set fair to compete for, I'm not going to say win, compete for another couple down the next 3-4 years as well. This is a very unusual position for Irish people to be in, is with that level of success and with that level of a gap almost between the chase and pack.
Yeah, there's a gap, but it isn't that big. That's one thing I will say. Wales could have been incredibly close. They could have been close for want of the interception at the end, which I thought was a poor play from Wales, to be honest. They should have beaten England, because I saw that was a try. So there wasn't a huge amount between Ireland and Wales, and they were deservedly second at the end of it all. Do you know, we'll go back to the boring thing first, if I can. We were critical a couple of times because at the start of it, because we weren't we were putting out, it was attritional from us. That's the one for me. That's my only fear, actually. It's not about the style. I don't mind if we have a style that wins. I just don't want to have a style that we kind of start losing players to. And we were kind of losing a couple, and I was worried a little bit about that. But I look back at this Six Nations, and I think of standout performances and pieces of skill. Huge amount of them are Irish.
Mm.
Like, but when you go through the team, Tadhg Furlong and some of his play, you know, from a guy who got injured in the middle of it and all that sort of stuff, how he played, and he played so well. James Ryan, Dan Levy, Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, Gary Ringrose coming back in, Robbie Henshaw scoring an incredible try, getting injured, martyring himself for the cause almost. Ringrose coming in, playing incredibly. He had to be a bit quieter yesterday because he totally emptied the tank last week. Rob Kearney coming back to full form. He was awesome on Saturday, which is a great, you know, it's a great thing to say because people were trying to write him off for a couple of years. He's had a lot of injuries. He brings out his big performance for the time that it's meant. There's a whole number of points in that, without mentioning our two wings.
Mm.
Keith Earls, who is running around like an 18-year-old, and Stockdale, who's running around like a 30-year-old. Like, just phenomenal to watch. So the amount of scores and joy that they had and were able to give us over it doesn't lend any credence to the boring idea. And I just think we looked... for me, it was just reassuring. So you say it's odd for Irish people not to have this sense. I just think it's reassuring that we can be there, that we can go out to a game as favourites or with a tilt of a Grand Slam and give our best performance of the championship at the end. I think that is phenomenal.
You were in and around the squad the entire week and obviously for a couple of hours extra than you might have wanted as well coming home then yesterday too, Rory. The sense was that they didn't want to talk about the Grand Slam too much, but I saw Dan Levy's quote saying that he, basically the goal for the entire season was the Grand Slam, and they figured that if everything came together, if they performed to Joe's game plan, that the Grand Slam would be theirs. But then Jonathan Sexton was also quoted as saying that he didn't really want to think about it or talk about it, or it wasn't an issue that was coming up in the lead-in and the immediate lead-in to the England game. What was the sense either before or afterwards in terms of the Grand Slam and how the squad approached it that you saw?
Well, it definitely came out. Dan Levy probably spoke about it the most, but Johnny Sexton also said that they did have the explicit target of winning a Grand Slam at the outset. They are match by match focused. We always hear that line from them, but I think maybe when they were in Spain, when they set their overall goals, Johnny, I think, had has always wanted to, having been in around the squad in 2009. He always felt, I think, that it was on his agenda to win one. But obviously then you set your overall goal and you drill down into each game and you kind of forget about it. And what you don't want to be is a hostage to fortune talking about a Grand Slam before you go and play France. And you may lose that game like they did in Scotland last year. So it was definitely on their agenda. Joe Schmidt has won two championships already without the Grand Slam. So, pretty half of the players who were there in 14 and 15, Keith Earls would have had one as well had he been fit. So they ticked that box. They knew that they had come in on the back of a really good... They've been building since South Africa 2016, that three-test tour, towards this point where they have infused the squad with youth, but they've also built a really strong leadership group, replacing the O'Connell-O'Driscoll axis that was there in the past. It's Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, Peter Armani, Rory Best's team now. And you look at the way they've built towards this, the way they played in November, the way he brought players through in June when the Lions were away, enhancing their own reputations and experience in New Zealand by drawing that series. And it was coming together. So they knew that the slam was on if they performed. They probably watched England out of the corner of their eye in November and noticed that the form was dropping. I don't think we ever saw them losing three in a row in this tournament. But at the same time, they weren't as strong as we expected. Scotland and Wales are really good. And on a different, if had things gone slightly differently, they both could have won in Dublin. But Ireland managed the game and obviously had that big moment at the end against Wales. So they knew, I think Paris, they all realised that was the, to win it that way, to 41 phases, they'd had a catalyst for their entire season. They'd shown that when the chips were down, they could pull it out of the bag, and they all believed thoroughly that they could get there with three home games. And then coming in last week, they all talked about seizing the moment and not going into their shell. And from the moment they kicked off on Saturday, James Ryan and Jacob Stockdale, two 21-year-olds, smashed the first tackle, drive Sam Simmons back, and set the tone for the whole thing. Dan Levy, 23, carries the ball hard at England once Ireland get the ball. Ian Henderson follows it up. Stander turns it over, but at the same time, Ireland have set the agenda with their contact work. in the opening minute, and you knew almost immediately that they were on it and that they were probably going to do it, because they're in such good form, they were so confident, and they knew what was at stake, but they embraced it.
Keith, we had Dennis Hickey in studio with us yesterday, and he spoke about how Ireland had always leant towards this somewhat totemic leadership thing on the pitch in terms of the captaincy. We had Paul O'Connell before that. We had Brian O'Driscoll. Your name may have came up there as well, Keith, as well, without wanting to swell your head anymore. But in terms of the leadership on the pitch, it was quite telling when the trophy presentation was made, in that you had Roy Best picking up the championship, and you also had Peter O'Mahony and Johnny Sexton picking up the Triple Crown plate as well. Those leadership little pods within the team are a huge, huge benefit for Joe Schmidt in terms of trying to bring his philosophy of the game onto the field and making sure that everything is borne out the correct way.
Very, very much so. And as well as that, you know, the idea of the one leader is that's almost something too big to carry at different times, and to have it anyway sustainable. So when you looked at the Irish team at the weekend and you see those three, you also see Rob Kearney at fullback, who's been there for all the success that Ireland have had over the last 10 years or 11 years, which is pretty amazing. You see Keith Earls trying to lead, getting comfortable in his own game. You listen to the other wingers and the young backs in the squad that don't play with Keith on a week-to-week basis, but actually do when they go into camp, and they learn an awful lot from him. There's an awful lot of people picking up slack, which makes it an awful lot better. And you need, I'd always go back, there's the spine of a team. It doesn't actually matter about the numbers on the jersey, but the spine of the team back to 1987 and the All Blacks winning had Fitzpatrick and Zintan Brooke, Kirk and Fox and Kerwin at 15. An unbelievable spine of the team. The English team that won the World Cup 2003 with Johnson and Dallaglio and Dawson and Wilkinson and Greenwood, all leaders in their own right, you're able to share the load. It doesn't put too much pressure on one guy. And I think if you looked at last season, at different times, our players looked a little bit ragged from it. And I would have said it was some of the leaders on the field looked a bit ragged because there were so many other injuries around those guys. They were having to carry a huge amount. And the manner in which Joe organises the team, which is incredibly well organised, with a lot of set plays that could go 5, 6, 7, 8 phases, you need to have a huge level of concentration. If one person is trying to carry that, I think it's probably too much. And it looked balanced. And that's the point within it. England have been complaining all along that they're lacking in leadership. Well, apart from the fact that all their players look tired, which they do, they keep talking about the great leadership of Dylan Hartley, but his performances haven't been up to scratch at all, you know. And you're wondering actually who are the other leaders in the field, and they seem to have precious few by comparison.
I want to talk as well before we break about the freakish nature of having 21-year-olds who are so assured in their skin. I know it's something we've spoken about before at length here on the show, but with the Grand Slam now assured, the likes of James Ryan and the likes of Jacob Stockdale there, we heard with his 7 tries across the championship. It's freakish stuff for people that young. Not only to be that good, being that good is one thing, talent is one thing, but to have the maturity about you to be able to play within that scenario, to be able to be dropped in on a moment's notice, like James Ryan might have been in the early part of the tournament. It's unbelievable that we have players of that emotional maturity that they can do it at that level.
It's pretty extraordinary, really. And James Ryan in particular, I keep saying we need to mind him, and I still stick with that. We do need to mind him a little bit. He'll get after this year in particular, he'll get tired because he's put a huge amount of effort into it. You can see it actually with Mauro Atoje. But in the midst of it all, he has led as a 21-year-old leading in a pack. He's led with the amount of times he's carried, the amount of tackles he's made, his general work rate. I just think we're breeding a more mature group of lads that are coming through. They're being brought in early into the squad. They're getting a taste to see what it's like. They're seeing some of the standards that's been hit by the other players, and they want to surpass it. They don't want to match it. They want to surpass it. And there's huge competition for places, which makes it fantastic. That just fits exactly into what they want to do. They're not being said, you're here, you're the finisher. Like Jacob Stockdale is a great example. He is a clinical finisher. He's still raw, but he's learning his trade in the white hot of the Six Nations Championship. So any mistake he makes, I don't think he'll be dragged over the coals to the same extent as anybody else, because he really should be learning them in Ulster. But they fast-tracked him, and he's been phenomenal.
It's quite a remarkable thing to see. And don't forget, our Six Nations coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. Let's hear from one of those young bucks, James Ryan, speaking at yesterday's homecoming.
James Ryan, Ireland second row. Talk to me about a season of seasons for you, and I guess a weekend of weekends for you. What a time it is to be part of this Irish rugby squad.
Yeah, no, it's yesterday was an amazing day. Just an incredible day, and I'm just very lucky to be part of it all. So over the moon now today. And we touched down, and the fire brigade actually were there, and they had a few tricolours up on the top of the trucks and stuff. So that was kind of cool. In fairness, so we got a great welcome.
James, you looked really cool and composed yesterday, and Rory talked about that before the game. He said you can't go into your shell, and there's a lot of young guys in the team, so that was a real possibility. How did you manage to avoid that?
I think we have an amazing skipper in Rory. You know, obviously this is my first season, but I think, you know, he leads so well, and I think when he speaks, it just gives confidence to the group. So I think we're very lucky to have someone like that as a leader.
How special is it to have captured a Grand Slam? And talk to me about some of the moments along the way. Did you feel, for example, when Johnny knocked over the drop goal in France, that maybe, just maybe, this was your year? And when Jacob intercepted a couple of times, things like that, were those all indications maybe that this was your year? Did that give you kind of confidence along the way? A bit of belief?
It definitely gave us belief. But I think we kind of took it week by week, to be honest. And we managed to kind of get 4 out of 4, and then we kind of focused on England, and it kind of, so that was great. Yeah.
Well done, James.
Thanks, lads. Cheers.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Yeah, you're very welcome back. We're looking back on Ireland's Six Nations campaign. It's Richie here in studio. Rory O'Connor's with me as well from the Irish Independent, and Keith Wood on the line. We heard from James Ryan just before the break. Rory, who's added an extra layer of strength and depth to the second row that I don't think we've seen before. When you factor in Tadhg Byrne is going to be coming back into contention come the summer tour of Australia. I was looking down through, I did a summary list of names that weren't involved for one reason or another, and setting aside one S. Zeebo, who's heading for France, because that was the name that hovered over the start of the Six Nations campaign. But going from forwards to backs, and there might be some mixed in between here, Niall Scannell, Tadhg Byrne, Jack Conan, Tommy O'Donnell, Sean O'Brien, Chris Farrell, Robbie Henshaw, Reese Ruddock, Josh Van der Fleer, Andrew Conway, Ian Keighley, Craig Gilroy, Luke Marshall, Rory Scannell, Darren Sweetnam, Adam Byrne, and eligible from January is one Tyler Blaindall. None of those were involved at all this week. That's unbelievable.
And we spoke about Ireland's leadership group earlier, and they've lost their vice captain from last season. Jamie Heaslip was retired, and Sean O'Brien will be part of that as well. You know, I think they probably would like to have Sean O'Brien in the 23 going to Twickenham last weekend. They obviously, that was part of the plan when he played against the Scarlets. That speaks volumes. The names on that list, most of them would have done a job. Some of them did a job and contributed to this championship win and this Grand Slam, before getting injured or missing out on selection. It's really, really impressive. And I remember 2 years ago doing a piece on Joe Schmidt's depth and writing out the depth chart for each position, and they were pretty light in a couple of areas. Second row, out half, tight head prop. And even Andrew Porter to come in now as a 21-year-old and do what he did against Italy and Wales when Tadhg Furlong got injured. You know, I think I certainly was one of the people who would have said that Tadhg Furlong going down could have derailed the whole thing, along with Robbie Henshaw and Ian Henderson getting injured. But Porter just stepped up, and even he was smashing players on the line in the last minute and twicking them at the weekend as if he'd been there all his life. The belief that these young players coming out of the school system have is quite incredible. You've a guy who was playing under 20s rugby last year coming on for half an hour in an out of position in Twickenham against England and almost scoring a try in Jordan Larmour. It's phenomenal stuff, and Ireland didn't fast track players for a long time. It was a big criticism of numerous coaches, including Joe towards the start. But he's identified, I think, since Argentina that was the big thing he needed to do. And even to go and win in Twickenham with Johnny Sexton off the pitch for almost half an hour, and to manage that moment before halftime, the one time where they might have wobbled when England scored their try and they were down to 14 men, with Johnny off the pitch and Joey Carberry at 10, who's played absolutely no rugby since Christmas, really. You know, I mean, he's had a bit of Leinster time, a bit of time against Italy during the garbage time at the end of that game. and he was brilliant. And you know, Kieran Marmion on the wing, there is so many examples of players stepping into the system and stepping up, and you think players like Furlong, Murray and Sexton are irreplaceable, and then they go out and prove you wrong, which is just so impressive and so reassuring.
Yeah, there's a couple of areas though, Keith, that will be cause for concern for Joe, with Japan on the horizon in, what, 18 months time, and I suppose that tour of Australia to come in the summer as well. One of those would be your former position, Keith, of hooker, because Rory Best will, what, be 37 by the time the World Cup rolls around. Sean Cronin will be knocking around 33, I think, or thereabouts. And underneath that, I mean, we do have the likes of James Tracy, we do have the likes of Niall Scannell, but they need to be getting game time, I'd imagine, sooner rather than later, in terms of playing in a green jersey.
Yeah, they can get some, and they need to be having a long run of injury-free rugby themselves for their province, which becomes very important. I was thinking about that over the weekend, whether at different times this year, Rory Best has looked absolutely beaten up, you know, and in Ulster, he just seemed to be struggling a little bit with it, and you're just wondering, is that at the end? And then, of course, you see some of the performances we've seen for the last few weeks. So he still has plenty of fuel in the tank, but it's whether you mind him in a period of time, whether you decide that he doesn't go to Australia, that he gets a summer off, that he gets to recuperate, that he gets to try and top up that level of energy that he's going to need to try and get to the World Cup in 2019, and whether that's actually possible for him.
What kind of a squad mix do you see heading to Australia in the summer, Keith?
Well, I can see a lot of this squad because it's young and they need to play rugby and they need to play in different places. They need to play out of the country. They need to play in different temperatures and different atmospheres and elements of that. New Zealand have done it for a long time. They've given their players 6 months off or 3 months off or 4 months off or a year off if they need to make certain, because they know that they want to perform at their highest level when they get to a World Cup time. So for that, I think we need to look at some of our players, see their injury profile. It doesn't matter about their age. It matters about how much rugby they've played in the last 6 months or 12 months, how many big tournaments they've played, as to whether they can actually get to the World Cup, because we want them firing fully at the World Cup, not just getting there. And we have a very young profile in the team at the moment, and it's how do you get that balance right.
With that in mind, Rory, does it make sense that Joey Carberry or maybe somebody else would be the starting 10 in Australia, or do you see the Sexton-Murray combination continuing on down there?
There's a balance there for Joe Schmidt, and I think he will err on the side of winning the series and doing what England did before 2003 when they went down to New Zealand and winning the series in New Zealand, or winning in New Zealand. I can see people's reasons behind suggesting that Johnny Sexton should be rested for this tour, but at the same time, he sets the tone for this team in such a way that I think he's, you know, 3 weeks with him amongst these young players away in an intensive environment against a really world class opposition would be so beneficial. I remember in 2016, the plan was always that they would rotate in the middle test, which they nearly won anyway. But he brought in Quinn Roo for his debut. He brought in Tadhg Furlong for his first start. And he almost, maybe winning at Cape Town helped, but he almost was willing to kind of throw the test in Johannesburg in a way to give those young guys experience and then try and win the series again in the third one. I think Joey Carberry will start one of the three tests. But I can't see, unless Johnny Sexton's injured, I can't see him going as the leading 10, because I think the benefit of winning the series will override the kind of long-term benefit of investing in those young players. I think he's shown that he can do that while also kind of keeping the winning run going. So I can see the reasons for leaving Rory Best at home as well, because he's had a very injury hit season this year. You can see both sides of it, but I think he'll go as strong as he can. But there will be injuries between now and then.
Keith, finally, we've heard, and England have been the lesson in this over the course of the last week or so, how things quickly can unravel from a point of invincibility. You can suddenly look like a shell of your former selves. Joe Schmidt's not a man to be resting upon his laurels. How does he build upon this over the course of the next 12 months, Keith?
Well, I think we're used to playing a different style of rugby up in the Northern Hemisphere. I think it has to change when you go to the Southern Hemisphere. It has to change when you go to a World Cup. You need to have different cards in the deck to be able to play. I looked at England unravel, and if we do it as a study of two coaches at the present moment in time, Eddie Jones has consistently said we're going to out-train everybody. We're going to be fitter than anybody. We're going to be 40% fitter And he looked like they were, all the players looked like they were flogged. And look, the example I use, and I think I used it last week, but I use it again. Mauro Itoje is a magnificent rugby player, one of the best players to come on the scene over the last 4 or 5 years. Truly, truly phenomenal. He goes on the Lions tour, plays very well, and plays the first game of the season when he comes back. So he has played a huge number of games for Saracens, and then he goes into England camp, both in the autumn and into the spring, and gets flogged. They want to out-train them to make certain they're out-trained over everybody else. Joe Schmidt has pretty much said he wants to limit the amount of training the guys are having. The RFU are able to manage the use of the players, so how do you protect them to the best way you possibly can? Mm. And that is the element. If we are thinking of welfare, how do you marry the two between welfare and success? Well, I think this year, on the back of an incredibly hard Lions tour where there are a lot of Irish players involved, we have managed it really, really well. And that can be a guide for what happens in the future. They have to be reactive all the time to keep an eye on everything that's happening. But I think he's such an assiduous nature that he wants to cover every eventuality. One of those is burnout of the players, and he has to be able to manage it properly. Mm. And I don't see Ireland kind of getting ahead of themselves at any stage. We can be excited about it, but the bubble that's in the camp isn't just about all the positive noises they say, but I think it also resists some of the more outlandish comments that will come immediately from the outside.
Mm. Sure, we'll enjoy the view for the time being. Keith Woods and Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, thanks so much for joining us and looking back on what's been a pretty special weekend for Irish rugby. And our Six Nation coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. Still to come, we will be sitting down with Pat Nevin. He'll be here in studio to look back on the weekend's football. But up next, we look at some of our best bits from this year so far. First up, our interview with Marcus O'Sullivan.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.